All right, you guys ready?
Yep.
I'm ready. I've been ready.
I think I texted you that I was ready and to open the call.
Yeah. You're ready for your close-up.
Mr. Weeder.
You want me to draw you like one of my French girls?
I'd prefer you didn't.
All right.
Nobody wants to see that.
Damn it, Bill, you're doing it to me, too? It's not enough that you do it to Andy? And then I killed Bill.
I'm picturing Bill turning into Data in Generations when he just starts laughing until he collapses.
I'm still waiting on you, Bill, to stop laughing.
I'll mute myself for a second.
I'll be in my bunk.
All right, I'll mute. You start.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You're Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell.
Welcome to Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine Star Trek podcast, not in that order, presented by two true freaks, where we watch each and every episode of Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, supposedly the most underrated show, but that's not what I'm getting from most of our listeners. I am J. David Weeder, bringing you in for the first time, and who do I have here with me other than Dr. Bill Robinson, still waking up from that hangover?
That's one.
And we have Mr. Paul Spataro.
Do you know how much restraint it took to not interrupt that opening?
I know, and I appreciate you taking the high road.
I had to consciously stop myself because I kept wanting to, just to be annoying. No other reason.
And lastly, but not least, we have Andrew Leyland.
That's three. Is it four? I don't know.
I've lost count.
Shouldn't it be an introducing Andrew Leyland?
Do I get introducing every week?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's like I'm a special guest star every week. You don't see my name in the credits because none of us really want to redo the opening.
Yeah, you're Dr. Smith, aren't you?
Yes, there you go. Or Heather Locklear on Melrose
Place. You're bubble-headed booby!
So do we
know the pain.
Not sure which of those you want to be.
Do we have any Star Trek news to get us started off?
Not a dicky bird.
Are you sure?
Well, we have not discussed the new upcoming series of Captain Picard.
We haven't?
Oh, yeah, right, okay. Brent Spiner was supposed to be on Supergirl this season and has backed out to be taken. You know, his role will be taken over by Bruce Boxleitner. Do you think Brent Spiner has backed out of Supergirl for this Star Trek show that Patrick Stewart's doing?
Ooh, isn't he looking kind of non-data-ish? But, well, you know what? There's amazing things that can do.
Yeah, I went seeing Ant-Man and the Wasp this week, and they did a pretty good job of de-aging Michael Douglas, Michelle Pfeiffer, and Lawrence Fishburne, thank you very much. But Lawrence Fishburne was played by his own son, so that was kind of cheating, I thought. But the other two, they did a good job.
Yeah, they did. That's the de-aging technology has become much, much better over the years because, you know, we've seen so many examples of bad special effects on age differences that it's nice to see them able to do it. Now what I want to see is them being able to age people and have it look realistic, which I don't know that I've seen a really good example of that yet.
Not that I can think of, no. But how do you trade from Brent Spiner to Bruce Boxleitner?
Well, they both got gray hair now.
Well, true, but Bruce Boxleitner is like a, you know, ruggish, is that even a word?
Roguish.
Roguish leading man.
Rugged?
Rugged leading man. And Brent Spiner is more of a standard comedy actor.
But judging by the part that they're playing, I think Bruce Boxleitner sounds better casting. Bruce Boxleitner suits Shady Senator more than Brent Spiner does. So I think it'll all end up working out. I just wondered if that was why he was backed out of Supergirl. Has he been approached to do something for this new Patrick Stewart thing? Because I can't imagine it's just going to be Picard.
It might be. There's stories that can be done that way, but I would like to see where Riker is and not so much Troy. What's Geordi up to?
I watched First of the Enemy this week, and I actually thought she was really good in that episode.
She does have moments. No, I love Marina Sirtis. I don't like Deanna Troi.
I also watched Starship Mine. The opening of that episode is sitcom Star Trek done very, very well. But that's for next week.
Yeah, we're jumping ahead. Well, there was one thing I wanted to throw on the table. We found out that Deep Space Nine almost ended completely differently.
Oh, yeah. I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, right.
It was going to be a St. Elsewhere ending, basically.
Yeah, it was all going to be... Well, we've not got to... Is it Far Beyond the Stars, that one?
I think that's the name of it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've not got to that episode yet, but apparently the entire series was going to be written by the writer that Ben Sisko plays in that episode, whose name I've forgotten.
Benny. Yeah, we'll just call him Benny.
We'll get more into it when we talk about those episodes, because I enjoy those episodes, but I'm glad they didn't go with that as the ending.
So am I.
Yeah, that would have been a train wreck.
Mm-hmm. They did it as an episode of Buffy as well, where Buffy's in a lunatic asylum and they try to convince her that everything that she thinks of the Slayer and all that shit is in her head. She's been batshit crazy for 2 or 3 years. And there are loads of people who think that should have been the ending of the show. And I'm like, fuck off.
That would have been terrible.
Yeah, it would have been awful.
I thought the ending of Buffy was fine as it was.
Yeah. It's just
Which one?
Terrible.
Which ending?
The ending, the final.
Oh.
Non-Buffy final.
Countdown.
Do you remember when we began this show and Paul said he would under no circumstances ever sing?
Yep.
And now we've got him singing pretty much every week.
Yep.
This has become a singing show.
Yeah, I mean, without too much detail, we don't really know what the Picard thing is at the minute. We have no idea about it other than Patrick Stewart's in it. We've not got a clue whether it's going to take place on a starship. Is he going to be in Starfleet Command? Is he going to be retired? Is he going to be head of a space station out in the middle of nowhere? We don't know anything.
I'm hoping they go with kind of what we had in All Things Must Pass. All good things, rather. And that, you know, he does the whole... has the future that they kind of showed in that to some extent. They can certainly build on it and make it more. But I hope they stay true to the continuity that they've created.
Well, except he won't be senile because they picked up what was causing that.
Yeah, no, that's fine. They don't have to have him be senile, but I hope they have him... You know, what did they have him working? He became an admiral and... I don't remember. No, I was thinking he worked at a college, but that was Data.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while since I've watched it, but you know, just have him have some of the same path as that. You don't have to worry about, you know, duplicating everything, but just don't conflict with what they've shown to speak of. That's all.
I had heard on another podcast that I think it was Nothing's On or Go Trek Yourself over on the Daryl Taylor network, because they have some people that know some people in CBS, or I don't know. It seemed like they seem to have some information in it that it's after he's left Starfleet in the future. So, I'm grasping for what exactly they said. They didn't have a lot of big details either, but they did say that it was after he had left Starfleet, an older, maybe a little bit more sadder Picard. So
maybe they could have him married to Beverly.
I'm hoping it's just a show about him working the vineyard, and they call it Picard Crest.
Picard Crest?
Picard Crest, yeah. And get Lorenzo Lamas in there. It'll be great.
I don't know. You know, maybe the entire series should just be kind of like trying to make fan fiction. You know, you have an episode where he fights a Gorn. You know, you have another episode where he meets, I don't know, Sulu. You know, just every episode, just some sort of pandering to the fans.
How the case a Gorn. Sound like Sean Connery.
I thought that was supposed to be Sean Connery.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Was it The Ghost in the Darkness?
Darkness and the Light.
Oh yeah, that too.
A ghost from Kira's past is hunting down her closest friends.
What are we dealing with here? Professional assassin?
Executing his victims one...
That's two.
...by one.
I should be down there trying to protect them.
And now he's closing in...
You murdered 5 people.
...on his final target.
Only the guilty have died.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Oh, wait.
My song. sorry.
It's time for Bill's song.
I'm not awake.
Did you fall asleep and have a dream?
No.
Didn't the Fifth Dimension sing your song?
What's that?
I don't know. Wedding Bell Blues.
No, that's not that.
Don't you marry me, Bill? I got the Wedding Bell Blues.
Thinking, Billy, don't be a hero. Come home and make me your wife.
That's another good one. Actually, that one, that could be like your wife singing it, trying to worry about like your diabetes. Billy, don't eat that hero. I don't know, something about like wanting you to keep your toes or something. I don't know. I'd have to look at the lyrics and put something together.
Yeah, toes are overrated. Yeah, I got 10. So anyway, song.
And so, The Darkness and the Light.
Oh, I guess I'll wait for my song.
Give me a song for
I'll do it next time.
But you wait 2 weeks to hear Bill's song.
Well, I only got one line of a song, so don't like build it up like that.
Oh, I built it up tremendously. You better, you know what? You got 2 weeks to come up with a better song.
2 weeks? What, it was like time? Yeah, okay, 2 weeks. 2 weeks. Name that movie.
You're thinking $2.
No. No. How long are you going to be on Mars?
Oh.
There we go.
2 weeks.
People ask.
2 weeks.
Cohagen.
Darkness and Light debuted the week of January 6, 1997, my second senior year, with a teleplay by Ronald D. Moore, which was his first... Wait, I got that wrong. But it was actually the first script sold by Brian Fuller, who did the story. Director was Michael Vahar, also a first-time director for this particular program. And Kira is shocked and saddened when Latha Mabron, fellow member of the Shakar Resistance Cell turned Vedic, has been murdered. Kira's shock turns to fear, however, when she receives a recorded message moments after learning of his murder. Her message consists of the picture of Latha appearing on the computer screen in a scrambled voice simply saying, "That's one. One is the loneliest number." There you go, Bill. Odo is able to trace the message, which Kira interprets as a threat to all of the former members of the Shakar Resistance Cell. Kira makes arrangements to transport Resistance member Fala onto a run-up... I keep hearing Hala.
That's exactly what I was hearing.
Yep. Kira makes arrangements to transport Resistance member Fala onto a runabout returning to the station, but something goes wrong during the transport and Fala is killed.
After that ain't no Fala back, girl.
There you go. We've already used that joke, though.
Come on, man. Reusing old jokes is our shtick.
Yeah. After what's left of the dead woman's body is removed, an investigation of the transporter reveals that Fala was killed by a tiny detonator programmed to scramble the transporter beam. A message from the scrambled voice saying that's two is soon delivered on the pad. Later, while working on a pad, not pad smash. Later, while working on the case in Odo's office, Kira receives a That's Three message displaying the face of Mobara, another member of the Shakar. Immediately, they begin efforts to contact him, hoping to stop his murder. Kira returns to her room in O'Brien's quarters to rest, but is jolted by a loud crash outside her door. Phaser drawn, Kira creeps...
I wish I had symbols right now. Sorry.
That sound effect can be easily found.
Oh.
Phaser drawn, Kira creeps into the living room, ready to face an assassin. Instead, she comes face-to-face with Furel and Lupaza, two more members of the Shakar who have come to help her. Thinking her bodyguard was the killer, they attacked him, causing the noise Kira heard. Furel, he's happy. Furel and Lupaza called to...
I'm on the space station. Yes, I am. Oh, sorry.
Pharrell and Lupaza volunteer to hunt down the assassin for Kira. She prefers to handle her problem within the boundaries of the law, but allows Pharrell and Lupaza to stay with her in the O'Brien quarters to protect her at the O'Brien.
And the law.
Yeah, and the O'Brien's unborn child. That works out well. Later, the grim but not unexpected news of Mobara's death arrives, and during a staff meeting, Odo surmises that whoever is doing the killing most likely has a vendetta against Kira, and she is also a likely target. Nog, Dax, and Kira work with the scrambled voice, hoping it will provide a clue, but the voice used in the message turns out to belong to Kira. Surprise. Their work is interrupted by news that there has been an explosion at the O'Brien quarters. O'Brien was not at home at the time, but Pharrell and Lupaza are dead. Told you. That'll work out well. Odo tells Kira that he has compiled a list of possible suspects with the skills, a particular set of them, opportunity and motive for these attacks. He refuses to give Kira the list, afraid the very pregnant woman will head off in search of the killer on her own. Yep, that's pretty accurate. Kira pretends to have no intention to leave the station, but at the moment Odo leaves, she transports into his office, steals the file, and shuts down Odo's computer so she can't be followed. Then she takes off in a runabout. After eliminating several suspects, she arrives at the home of Cilaron Prin. Almost instantly, she is placed in a restraining field and told she will die. Cilaron, who was severely disfigured in the Resistance bombing, is punishing those involved, especially Kira, who was the ringleader. The bombing in which he was injured killed civilians, women, and children. Cilaron himself was not a member of the Cardassian military, but a simple laundry worker cleaning the soldiers' uniforms, and he is disfigured, which doesn't mention it here. That's kind of a key plot point. Thanks for leaving that out of the synopsis from Wikipedia. He points out that he has not killed indiscriminately like Kara. She counters that the Cardassians were a hostile alien race occupying Bajor, and even if he only provided the military minor logistical support, he was indirectly aiding the occupation, and thus his views are hypocritical. Cilaron tells Kira that he will spare her baby but kill her, and prepares to operate. Kira warns him that this will kill the baby, which is not Bajoran but human, meaning it has special needs. Cilaron is unmoved. Thinking quickly, Kira begs for a sedative, realizing that the herbs she has taken for her pregnancy have rendered most sedatives ineffective. She pretends to fall asleep, and then lunges at Cilaron, attacking and killing him. Sisko, Bashir, and Odo arrive to rescue her, but Cilaron is already dead, and Kira, shaken and sobered by her experience, only wants to go home. The end. That was not the best synopsis. It was very thought-provoking. This episode,
not the
really.
Best episode. I'm sorry.
What?
Yeah. I like the fact that in the end, they were really both wrong.
Mm-hmm.
When you had something to think about, it wasn't, boy, they both have a good point, they're both right. No, they were both wrong. She did kill women and children indiscriminately and should feel bad about it, and he shouldn't be killing these people who were occupied. They're both wrong.
Yeah, that's one of the best aspects of this episode. That's kind of a trait of Deep Space Nine, is that almost everybody's got dirty hands at some point.
Mm-hmm. And neither one of them has the slightest understanding of the other's point of view, which is a little un-Kira-like because she is a little bit more empathetic than that generally. But I could see where she's so bitter over what the Cardassians did that she's just not capable of seeing it. So it's to me, that's the best part of this episode. Otherwise, it feels like it just kind of falls into almost a stereotypical horror movie ending, you know, with the disfigured bad guy facing off against the, you know, your hero of the episode. But the thought-provoking aspect of it is what rises it above that.
Mm-hmm. Because after I watched it, I mean, the next day I was still chewing on this episode. And like you said, nobody's right here. Nobody comes to an accord. There's no real lessons learned by any of the main two people involved in this, which is kind of the lesson the viewer learns.
It was not a very special lesson-learning episode.
No. Luckily, Gordon jumped in and show up and talk about having... Yeah.
God is my witness, I thought Cardassians could fly.
Well, they can. They have spaceships. Wait.
What?
Not awake yet.
Bill is here. It's the only thing speaking. Put him on. Now you should be going 7, 6.
I like...
I'm sorry, go ahead, Andy.
No, I was cool. I've been thinking about this one quite a lot. On the one hand, I like that it isn't a preachy episode. Kira was a terrorist / freedom fighter. Always depends what side of history you're on. What this guy's doing is completely batshit crazy and wrong. I love Kira's speech at the end where she's completely unrepentant about what she's done. I liked, like you just both said, I like that twist to it that she isn't sorry about it. She makes no apologies for what she had to do. And in the instance that we're in this, you can totally see her point. But yeah, both of them are wrong in what they did, even if they had noble reasons for doing it. I ultimately
How did he have a noble reason for doing what he did?
His explanation of doing it is he thinks he's getting back at somebody who has wronged him. So in his head, what he's doing is right.
It's right. It's not noble.
Well, he was
revenge is not
that...
noble.
Well, depends if you can or not. Yeah.
Well, he was careful not to kill anybody that he deemed innocent.
Yeah. So anyway, irrespective, my whole problem with it is, yeah, the ending's incredibly cliched and horror movie, but I don't believe for a f***ing second that this guy's smart enough to pull off all the shit that he pulls off in this episode.
Well, I don't know. Garrick's just a simple tailor, and this guy's just a simple
shit. You get from Garrick.
This guy's a step below Garrick on his simpleness. He washes what Garrick makes.
Yeah, I mean, come on. This guy can barely... talks to himself all the time. He's not very convincing whatsoever as the ultimate bad guy behind this plot. I don't believe for a second he's pulled this off. To the point where Odo doesn't figure this out, does he? Odo doesn't work out what's going on. This guy is not a competent bad guy in any way whatsoever. Yet we're supposed to believe that for 40 minutes of this episode, he's pulled off these quite remarkable, well-planned, well-executed executions. Bollocks. I didn't buy that for a minute the minute that we met him. And because of that, the episode kind of fell to bits, despite a brilliant performance by Nana Visitor.
Yeah,
I don't disagree with you that he is kind of a buffoon, so he shouldn't be able to stymie the brilliant staff of the of the station. So I agree with you about that, but that didn't really bother me that much. I don't know.
Because I'm with Andy on this one. because I was kind of like, it's like the big reveal, aha, and I'm like, that's it.
Yeah.
Really?
The villain is the guy who threw in the laundry tablet with the into the machine. Just going back to Nana Visitor, I'm sorry to change the subject on you, but I think, like, thinking about what she did and what she had to do during the resistance and everything, I'm kind of a mind that she had to justify in her mind what she did back then, you know, because there were forms of atrocities that had to be committed in order to try and get their freedom. So I'm thinking she's already come to grips with it, and she's not willing to revisit in her mind, you know, maybe I went over the line at some point, you know, and should have been a little bit more compassionate towards some people, you know, any of that stuff. I think she's just of a mind of, I did what I had to do, end of story, and I'm not willing to discuss it any further.
Yeah, I think the Kira that we've seen over the past couple of years has mellowed considerably from the Kira that was in the first season of the show. But I don't think for a moment that she has even considered apologizing to the Cardassians for what she did. You only have to see her whenever Ducat comes on board the station, that suddenly, like, it shields up red alert again.
Sorry, no. I'm sorry. You said, the way you said, never mind. You said Ducat, but you said Ducat, and then I pictured him with a cat face or something. Totally. Sorry.
Another Photoshop for Chris. It just hit me, Andy.
I now know the name of my next cat.
Ducat.
When you mentioned
it would have to be Gul Dukat.
Gul Dukat. Oh, my wife's gonna hate me.
But when you mentioned season one, Andy, I thought of the episode Duet, and I had to look up the episode. I couldn't remember the name. This is that counterpoint.
It's a companion piece to that episode.
Yeah, because she learned a lesson. Like, not everybody was a terrorist. You know, the Cardassians were there, but some people are repentant. And here, it's like that lesson was completely forgotten. It's like that whole moment of character growth is like, yeah, we don't really need it. And that kind of, like, as I'm sitting here now, I'm like, okay, that's going to change my rating, because you're right, this is a more evolved Kira. Now, granted, some of her friends have been killed. She's pregnant, which changes the perspective. But you would think some of that ability to figure out who's, you know, really the guilty would have still stuck around, and it was just sacrificed completely for this episode, for as you mentioned, a horror movie.
Would it have worked if you had a line of dialogue in there where she said something to the effect of, I'm sorry for what happened to you, but if you're looking to place the blame, put it on your Cardassian leaders, because they're the ones who created the situation?
Yeah, something along those lines, but that's not what we got.
No, we didn't get, I'm sorry, what happened to you at all. We got, screw you and your messed up face, you stupid washing machine guy.
Screw you, Jason Voorhees.
Yeah, really.
I don't care what happened to your mum.
Now, this episode did give me a little bit of, like, a tiny moment of my own introspection, because when I was in the service, there was at one point, and I remember writing a letter to my future wife, because we were going, the ship was ordered to go somewhere, and we were possibly going to have to launch missiles somewhere, and I had wrote her a letter that because my job directly involved launching said missiles, and I was kind of like coming to grips with that, you know, like, I was like, well, what if someone innocent is somewhere? I mean, kind of along the storyline, you know, I mean, I wasn't afraid I was going to have an enraged laundryman come after me in the future.
The laundryman was enraged and ripped Bill's head off.
That was just a pleasant surprise when it actually happened.
Hey. So, I mean, it did give me a little moment to pause and, you know, think about that. But it was, you know, it was something I hadn't thought about in almost 30 years. So, but, all right. I don't know where I went with that. I was just...
Well, no, that's a good perspective, that I'm hoping that when Kira did these acts at the time, there was that hesitation of some kind.
I don't think there was.
You think it's no, like,
no, I think you know at, me, the, yeah. at that point, I think Kira was all soldier and nothing else.
Right. I mean, I was stationed on a ship, and I wasn't directly facing anybody. So, I mean, it was more like the Roger Waters song, the bravery of being out of range. You know, you have time, you know, you sit there and think about, well, you know, what is this? Is what I'm doing really right? But, you know, well.
So you're more like the guys on the ferry in The Dark Knight with the button. I did catch what I thought was a flub in this one.
Oh, I got all kinds of flubs, but go ahead.
When Worf mentions Rule of Acquisition 111, and he's asked, you know the rules of acquisition? He says, I'm a graduate of Starfleet Academy. I know many things. They would not have had the rules of acquisition when he was in Starfleet, or at least in Starfleet Academy, rather, because they didn't really get to know the Ferengi until during TNG.
He was on the ship when they met the Ferengi.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, they didn't even know what they looked like.
Yeah.
They thought they ate their victims, their business associates. Not Vegas. Yeah, so definitely not
that
Vegas.
That one jumped out at me. I didn't catch that one.
I didn't either. But no, well done. Yeah,
I do
maybe
like the
studied on them since. What do you think?
But that has nothing to do with graduating Starfleet Academy, unless his point is I learned in Starfleet Academy that you study everything. You know, that's his point.
No, okay. I think that's just Worf.
Yeah,
Worf studies everything.
I do like the rule he quoted: treat people in debt. Like family. Exploit them.
Yeah.
Worf's scene in this episode was brilliant, and that's it. He's not in anything else in the rest of this one. Is Jadzia not in this one at all either?
I believe this is the one that I read a note I was reading. I believe you're right. Hold on, let me look under the trivia.
An episode without Jadzia is like a day without sunshine.
She's at the beginning. We just never found out exactly what she did about her gambling debts.
Okay. Maybe it's next episode. It's just the first time she would not be in any episode, I think, is the next.
Because Nana Visitor's carrying this one largely because she has had given birth at this point, hasn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she's back on full duty now.
All right. So here's one of my two things. One is more funny. Another one is just like, really? That's what I... That somebody wasn't... Well, it is TV, so I guess I'll let it go. So anyway, when Kira hears the noise, she turns the lights out in the next room, comes out with her pistol drawn, is sneaking into the room, yet stands up in front of the backlit window. I believe not once, but twice. I was thinking, really? You're a trained operative, and you're going to stand with the only source of light in the room to your back so that somebody could easily spot you and shoot you. But I don't really know how else they could have done that scene. I guess she could have crept into the room and, like, ducked down below the window, but she is supposed to be pregnant, so I guess I'll let that nitpick go. The other one is Miles O'Brien is going to be really pissed when he finds out that somebody blew up his quarters and all his shit was blown out into space.
Yeah, oddly, the quarters look perfectly fine in the next episode.
Yeah.
I mean, it... It explosively... Whatever. Yeah, they could save and recapture all the stuff, but not the people. Whatever.
Did they make Soylent Green out of them?
Well, the people wouldn't last long in the vacuum of space where, you know, items may not collapse.
True, but still, I was, you know... You'd think they'd have safety precautions in that, like... Well, it is a Cardassian station, so, I mean, if it was a Federation station, they'd probably have, like, a backup force field to pop up if it blew out.
But... To the other end of that spectrum, Bill, one scene I liked was, I loved the scene between Odo and Kira in the sick bay. That was well acted by both of those, but they didn't make Odo look like an idiot. He walks into the office after Kira's been in there, looks down, is like, my chair has been moved.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
puts it together. Because he is somebody who would be observant and somewhat anal retentive.
Well, yeah, because... Security. Well, because it's kind of a callback, because we remember that Dax would sneak in and move something like... A quarter of an inch or whatever. Yeah, like a millimeter, and he would be all aggravated. So, yeah, he better notice that his chair has moved.
I love that thought, and I wish they continued to do it. You know, just keep making reference to it. Dax was in messing up my stuff again, you know. So the guy who played Silurian Prin he's played seven different Star Trek characters, apparently.
Yeah. And he was actually a big part of Enterprise. He was the one of the main guys in the Zindi, if I remember correctly.
He had two different parts in Enterprise, apparently. He was Terena L. I don't even know. He looks dead. That looks like it's from Enemy Mine.
I was just going to say, he looks like Luke.
And then he was Degra, but he was also on Voyager. He had another role on DS9. I'm not even sure what... What race he is. I guess, yeah, that's the one when the two twins and one of them got killed, I think.
Yeah.
And then...
The cute little jumpers.
And he was on TNG as one of the chorus members for the deaf guy.
Oh. The guys that got zapped.
You know what, though? Actually, I will say that saying the villain's incompetent may not be entirely true, because think about how much time has passed for him to plot and procure things of that nature. But still,
and he is only getting rid of what, five people? So, it's, yeah.
And most of it's technology doing its job.
Revenge is a tracer probe. It's what keeps me going. Wait. You guys are all sitting where you should be. Oh, I'm sorry. I've said too much.
But I feel like this episode, even though it was thought-provoking, I think it could have landed a lot harder if you did. If you looked back at the first season duet, which is one of the best episodes of the whole series, not to mention the first season, and realized there is a chance for the characters to grow from this experience, but nobody does. Nobody.
Mm. Yeah, unlike duet, which I think we all pretty much gave that 5 out of 5. This ultimately has no bearing whatsoever going forward, or matters, or anything.
Yeah, no, it really is much more standalone for what that's worth.
It had some decent production value. Once she goes to the villain's home, and I cannot remember, Silurin, whatever his name is, for some reason it just left my head. That was a cool looking shot when you're looking at the exterior.
Well, for what it's worth, I was a 4.5 on duet. I was the outlier. Apparently, well, I hated it. It was a 4.5.
We expect that from you at this point, though, yeah. Don't we?
Although I'm starting to become the negative Nelly.
That's why I invited you on. So you can get all the hate mail.
I'm good with hate mail. At this point, nobody's heard me on the episodes yet. Oh, wait, that's not true.
Yeah.
Well, at the point they hear this, they will have.
Yeah. Time travel's weird. So are we out of stuff to talk about on this episode?
it was nice to see two friends again, Pharrell and La Paza. They were the only ones that really made an impact when they got killed. I liked Nog being the guy who's analysing the thing with his ears, rather than letting the computer do everything.
It's the lobes.
And my only problem with that was, it's Bajoran. And it's like, how do you know it's Bajoran?
I'm sure they teach languages at Starfleet Academy.
Well, I was going to say, if he just had like an additional line, like, the dialect sounds Bajoran, something like that.
No. Well, due to the nose ridge that they have, it creates a certain resonance inside the nasal cavity that is detectable in the by my hearing at a frequency of... See, there you go. There's your explanation.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that. Just having him go, it sounds Bajoran. And it's like, what the fuck do you know that?
Because
Bajorans all sound Americans.
Look at the ears, man. Look at the ears.
So you grew up on a space station orbiting Bajor?
Oh, hey. Yeah. There's reasons you can explain it, and they should have just thrown in something for an explanation. But I did love that scene. That I get the impression Jadzia is pressing all the buttons to try and do sciencey stuff to filter out noise and do all of that, slow down the audio.
Bajoran.
Yeah. And you've just got Nog sat there with his ears going, well, I can actually tell from the timbre of her voice that she was... And I love Jadza. I never argue with somebody's lobes.
I like that they seem to have calibrated Nog now, where he's still a little stuffy from Starfleet Academy, but he's not completely insufferable like he was a few episodes ago. Ugh. He's not a character.
That's because that was terrible a few episodes ago. Yeah.
But we've progressed for Nog.
Yeah. And I also like that we've... Not that he's in this episode, because he's not, but I just, while we're on Nog, I'm glad that, you know, Rom isn't just a buffoon now at this point in the show. You know, when Rom is on, you know, he's got an Edith Bunker quality to him. And I don't know why I'm going into Rom right now, because he isn't in this episode. But, you know, he's a dingbat, but he's got some sort of, you know,
endearing,
inert sense that he sets him on the right path. And you respect his thoughts now, which I like. I don't know. When they have characters who are just totally there for stupid comic relief, I think they get boring after a while. Anyway, again, not a Rom episode.
Is Morn in this episode?
I don't recall seeing
this
him.
This isn't the one that opens with him locked in a bar, is it? Because I've watched ahead, so that's why I couldn't remember, which I thought that was very, very funny. I saw that. But I guess we'll talk about that when we get to that one.
Yeah, I thought that was funny when I saw it on Cheers.
Say what you want. What would Blaine say? See, I got a new song now.
And you read my mind.
Oh. Oh, really? Was that
what you were going for? I was trying to find something clever to say to segue, and it just failed.
Oh. If you could read his mind, oh.
Oh, boy.
I don't even remember any more of my Gordon Lightfoot lyrics.
If you could read my mind, you don't need to do any lyrics. You just need to sound like you're like...
Bill. I'm still thinking, I've already got to edit the shit out of my synopsis.
Oh, you can't edit that. That was gold.
If it went on for longer, I would have had to have edited it. Like, okay, dude.
The thing is, I actually know those lyrics, but I was doing my Lightfoot impression.
If you could read my Gordon mind, I have things in my head that would make Andy blush.
Mm-hmm. If you could read my mind, I'd have things that would make Andy blush. That's what I need to work on, a Gordon Lightfoot Deep Space Nine song.
So Virtual Porn.
I'm trying to remember. There was a YouTube video, and I think it was Elmer Fudd sings the songs of Gordon Lightfoot. something along those lines, and I'm just trying to look for it as we're talking, and I can't find it.
Why are you looking for that? We've got to pull up Blaine's email.
I have Blaine's email up. I'm ready to jump into that whenever the show dictates that I do, but Gordon Lightfoot is funnier than Blaine.
How dare you?
Oh, are Blaine says, Canadian?
I'm not sure. I don't know. Where was the Edmund Fitzgerald? Was that in Canada?
Well, it was on the Great Lakes. The Great Lake, they call it Shigumi.
It's amazing how many hits he had. Anyway, Blaine says, "Hi, guys. We've got a definite theme to these past few episodes. As things are now, Kira is now a station officer more than a Maquis, with her old ties being rather forcibly cut, enjoyable enough, and with a genuinely creepy ending. But it's been a while since the Dominion reared its head. It would be nice to get back to that, given that the reason they wrapped up the Klingon War so quickly was supposedly to do exactly that." Blaine. I agree, and I don't... I didn't want the show to just become Dominion, at least not when we were watching it at first, because this, you know, they weren't really doing so much of the serialized TV series at that time. So you still did have room for episodes that diverted off of that. I thought this was a good episode, overall. I don't want to get into our ratings just yet, but I thought this was good, and it was worth going into. I would have changed a couple of little things about it, but, I think they were also concentrating on the fact that Nana Visitor was pregnant, and they wanted to just kind of use that while they could before it was over, because she couldn't work.
She'd had her baby already. She'd had her baby, and they had her in a prosthetic after that.
She had the bump?
Yep, that was not a real bump.
Okay. Anything to add from anyone with Blaine's thoughts?
No, I think he's right that it's getting back to status quo, as you would know the show, but still, I've got nothing after that, actually. I don't know why I said that. So.
All right, so I guess it is time to get into our ratings then.
All right, I've been batting this around. I think when I watched it, and shortly after I watched it and the next day, as I was thinking about it, it was at a good 3.5. Never quite made it to 4, like 3.75 at one point, but having discussed it and realizing that they've actually taken Kira a step back in this episode, I'm going to give it a 3, because it's still above average. The performances by both Renee Imbushin-Waugh, which I can't say correctly, but deal, and Nana Visitor... That scene.
René
Aubergenois.
That's okay, Dave. I call him René Aubergen for years.
I'll just call him Clayton. but I thought the
Benson.
Scene, the very tender scene between them in as she's, recovering was marvelous. And so that elevated the episode in just one scene. So about, I'll give it a 3, a solid 3.
All right. I'm also at a 3 on this. I thought it was an enjoyable episode. I liked watching it. There were points where it kind of fell shy, and there were points where it had me thinking. I don't mind that they didn't just give Kira... In fact, I like that they didn't make her repentant, because like I said, I think she had to kind of come to grips with what she was doing back when she did it, so I think that made it more more thought-provoking, and I enjoyed watching it, but overall, I didn't think it was a great episode, so I think it's a solid 3. And just to correct myself, it was not Elmer Fudd singing Gordon Lightfoot, it was Bullwinkle.
I was trying to come up with something spiffy. I give it 3 dead resistance members.
Just to confirm, that's 3?
That's 3, yes. Yeah.
3 Jeez. Dead resist. Jesus, man!
Okay, 3 gold press dead. Gold press latinum dead resistance members. Makes you feel better.
Wow, we really did kick you out of bed on the wrong side, didn't we?
Yeah.
three rotting corpses of that guy who just used to chase the A-team all the time. I hope he burns it down.
Well, actually, it's four, but after the one went through the transporter malfunction, there's only not enough left for a full person. So
yeah, we'll just call it. Didn't three. Survive long, thankfully.
You just pointed something out. The woman that gets killed in the transporter, she was in the same position as the villain. She was feeding them information while living in the palace. She was also a servant.
Yeah, but she was taking a more active role than he was doing the laundry. True. I mean, I'm not justifying his killing of her. I'm just saying she was a legitimate member of the resistance. I no matter how you want to slice it, she was passing information along technically to the enemy. If you're looking at it from the Cardassian point of view, and
from a certain point of view,
exactly.
I just didn't realize the parallel there. I apologize for.
I didn't catch that either. But she still was a little bit more active than he was. Prussian shirts, Andy. What say you?
Three across the line.
Yep,
marginally above average.
Come on, disagree with us, Andy. Give it a bad rating.
No, because I didn't think it was bad. I just didn't buy the villain, but I liked the premise that neither of them was right. This wasn't a Star Trek morality play in the traditional sense. Both of them are wrong in what they're doing. I quite like that. I thought that was quite a brave storytelling tack to take. And Nana Visitor, whenever she's the centre of an episode, she elevates it by a good star easily, just by her performance. Mm-hmm. But it is middling when you compare it to Duet. So three seems perfectly reasonable to me. It's not awful. It doesn't suck. It's perfectly enjoyable. And I didn't look at my watch throughout the episode like I did through one that may be coming up very shortly for us.
And to build on what my friend Andy has said, remember, kids, two wrongs don't make a right, but three lefts do.
No, it's time for Andy to pass out like Data.
Oh, dear God.
And
I think we should have Grumpy Bill on the show more often.
Yeah.
Grumpy?
I think we should have Normal Bill on the show more often.
Hey!
Nothing. And it's okay if you've killed the villain and unfortunately just leave him there on the planet's surface.
Yeah.
They're just like, yeah, we gotta go. And
yeah, screw that guy.
Yeah.
Deep Space Nine and CSI will be up by later.
That's what I was wondering. There's no repercussion for this?
Boom, boom, boom. Yeah, and then what's his name will come in with some space sunglasses.
Horatio.
Yeah!
Looks like he needs some aloe for that burn.
Yeah! Looks like the tailor's been pressed.
Yeah! And now I want them to do the Picard show like a CSI in space.
Oh, dear.
Do we have email?
We have email. We have email.
I wouldn't know.
Yes, we do. Should we cover Faith's in Purgatory Shadow? Oh, we've not covered that yet, have we?
Nope.
Faith, so that one has to wait
again.
Sorry, Faith.
Because we can't. Faith. We
to some to some
faith.
Has emailed.
What?
To some. Emailed.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Which is Ben.
To some. As emailed, Apocalypse Rising in Season 5 is our email from To Some, who is really the spatula messiah. He's not the messiah! Insert predictable joke here.
He's a very nice boy.
Hi, Ben. It's nice to have you back. Guys, welcome to Season 5. As commented, this is the best season of the show, and it's not even particularly close. Hope you end up agreeing with that. I remember at the time some people were hailing Season 4 as a classic year of Trek due to its overall consistency and a few really hard-hitting episodes. What Season 5 does is craft a bunch of really strong episodes that come together thematically into something greater. It's just serialized enough to be more than the sum of its amazing parts. Apocalypse Rising indeed brings us back to Dominion stories, but that really started with the previous year's finale. One thing that I think Broken Link doesn't get enough credit for is the fact that it, as Blaine might put it, folds all the Next Generation's Klingon stuff into a more DS9 story, with the ending revelation that the Klingon arc is just a part of the Dominion arc. Broken Link begins a process continued by Apocalypse Rising, and probably completed by the mid-season two-parter, of getting the show back on the path it was on pre-Worf, except that Worf and Martok are now part of the show. Also, since by the time you read this it'll be mid-season, season, can we take a moment to appreciate the more wordy and lyrical their original series style episode titles? Suddenly, the franchise remember that used to give us phrases like "For the world is hollow and I have touched the sky," rather than the nondescript Next Generation-esque names like "The Visitor." Coming up, we have the bland "The Ship," but going forward from there, titles get interesting again. Glory to you and your house, Ben.
Kapla.
Kapla. It is a good day to read your email to some to some.
You know,
the
Gordon
day
Lightfoot,
is not yet over.
Gordon Lightfoot could sing, "For the world is hollow and I have touched the sky."
"For the world is hollow and I have touched the sky" does sound like a country and western song, doesn't it?
Yeah, and now I picture it sung by Elmer Fudd. Elmer Fudd.
Blood.
"The world is hollow. Perhaps. I've touched the
perhaps.
Sky."
Maybe, maybe you should have it by Bullwinkle, though.
To get to the email, we'll only really know when we get to the end and we look at all our ratings. But so far, I think we have been given this threes and fours across the board, haven't we?
Let me take a quick look. Fours, 3.5.
There's one stinker in there.
The Ascent got 2.5s across, except for Dave, who gave it a 2.
Yeah.
And let He Who Was Without Sin got 2s across the board.
And I
otherwise,
think that one was being charitable.
Otherwise, let's see, Rapture, I only gave it 2.5. I'm the outlier on that. And Looking for Parmak in All the Wrong Places, I gave it 2.5 and was the outlier on that also. That's before we brought Dave on so that I wouldn't always be the negative guy.
That's before we brought the lightning rod, Dave on.
But now, if you look at those and you pull them out, they're kind of standalone episodes that don't. But if we look at the ones that tie into the arc, maybe we've been giving them higher, because I know I've been, more than last season, I've been watching ahead because I've been interested in the overall theme of the season, because I'm already up to, I think I'm up to Empok Nor with watching ahead. So I'm almost to the end of the season.
Yeah, the problem is if I get that far ahead, then I...
Then you got to go back and watch again to get...
Yeah.
I'm right there with you, yeah. Maybe I had another thought there, but it's gone.
Oof. Well, we know that you can't have more than two thoughts in your head at once, Bill.
You're kind of like Tinkerbell.
Who are you? What? Oh. Tinkerbell.
Tinkerbell.
Yeah, that's a nasty thought in your head now. Get that out.
I have this picture of you in that costume, and it's scary.
Flying around, like trying to fly around.
No, I literally have a picture of you in it.
And if Scott Gardner was listening to this, he would throw his MP3 player down on the ground and curse the world, the ground we walk on. Now he has a picture of Bill as Tinkerbell, and he's got to work with that every day.
I could see at Disney they start having times with, you know, to take pictures with Bill in his Tinkerbell costume.
Really, it's Tinkerbell. The kids are crying.
Get over here, kid. Take a picture. I think you have to have a cigar hanging out of your mouth.
I have a cigar.
You're like blowing the smoke in the kids' faces as to take them.
You want to cry? I'll give you something to cry about. Smoke sting in your eyes, you little man.
Just like Chuck Frost scratching your belly in the pictures.
You know, the costume doesn't quite fit, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, that goes without saying.
Hey!
Well, I'm talking about for this image to be as comical as it should be.
Yeah.
That's right. Make fun of the fat guy. Yeah.
So far, we have Bill wandering Universal Star Trek land in the future as a giant tribble, not licensed, and now as Tinkerbell.
Forgot about being a giant tribble. I'd like to be a giant tribble. Life would be easy. I'd just eat and breed.
Isn't that what you do?
Yeah, you got three kids too, so shut up, English boy.
That was like, you know, Bill, you just like walked through this giant opening, and then you got upset at Andy for closing the door behind you.
I'm sorry, I'm still living it. Shut up, English boy.
Laugh it up, Buzzball.
Oh, dear me. Next time on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, Odo adopts a child.
The enemy sent it.
A baby changeling?
The Federation wants it.
If it gets out of that container, it could be dangerous.
The future relies on it.
They want you to establish communication with the changeling as soon as possible.
Now, the secret of the galaxy's most elusive race...
There must be some other way.
...must be uncovered. At whatever the cost.
Don't die.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
It's every bit as fascinating as it sounds.
Which is pretty much not at all.
Yep.
Oh, I'm gonna give that's complete.
I'm going to give a little bit of a teaser for next time around. I don't totally agree. So we're going to fight
it. It hasn't. I got to go watch the cats fighting song to the Star Trek fight song, or the crab with the knife, which is even
I love
better.
The crab with the knife. That's my favorite.
That is so great. You've seen that, right, Dave?
Yes, Andy? Of course I've seen it.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yeah, I've seen it. Boom, boom, boom.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
You can start now.
Welcome to... Damn it, Paul.
I think we should start now. There doesn't seem to be anyone around.
Oh, I got a song. But anyway, I'll save that. I'll save that for when we get to the show.
I thought you were muted.
Which one is? I was for a moment.
But your moment is past.
The moment is past.
All right, welcome to... Now. Oh, come on.
Andy's just enjoying this so much.
All right, next time anybody interrupts... Oh, actually, I can cut that out. Never mind.
You cut yourself out. You're interrupting yourself.
I just want to feel okay.
he wants so desperately to be one of us that he's interrupting himself now. Peer pressure at its worst.
One of us.